Press Coverage Panthers podcast. Thank you for making us a part of your weekend. It is great to be here on an incredibly sunny, incredibly hot July 4th. Happy Independence Day to everybody listening today. Hope you get to watch the hot dog contest later, enjoy some family friends, grilling out later as we celebrate our country's independence, which ironically, we can get to later. So today's going to be a great show. I will tell you, I've got a segment planned for the end of the show. It might get me in trouble. I don't know. Being completely honest with you, Ian is great here at Full Press Coverage. He's been very flexible and gives us, you know, as much freedom as we want to say what we want. But we'll see if that freedom still exists at the end of today's podcast, because it's going to get a little bit hairy here in a little bit. I'm excited for it. It's a good segment plan. But we're going to say that for the last. So here's what I want to start off with. Earlier in the week, something happened and the Panthers absolutely need to take action. David Njoku announced that he wants to be traded out of Cleveland, which, by the way, comes as absolutely no surprise to me. Cleveland's dysfunctional. It's not really a great city to be in. Like, I mean, if you had Cleveland in Los Angeles or Miami, at that point, you know, like, Miami, they're dysfunctional too, but they do still get players that want to go play there. They do still get free agents. The Chargers and Rams, players still want to go play there. Cleveland, not a lot of want to be there, and it's dysfunctional. And on top of that, for a tight end, you've got a quarterback who plays a little bit hectic, a little bit crazy, a little bit off the cuff. The Panthers need to go get David Njoku. They need to make this trade. For one, this is the weakest position on the roster by far in Carolina. Ian Thomas, he's the expected starter. Last year was his second year in the league. His play actually declined in his second year. He only started 3 games, and I'm not sure he would be many teams' first backup. You couldn't possibly plan on him being the starter this year. That can't be the plan. You've got to have somebody else. This is easily the weakest point of the roster. It's the one part, if you're a defensive coordinator, you basically just go, well, they've got no real threat at tight end. We don't even have to game plan for that. Second, this is one of the most important positions in the league, especially in terms of converting in the red zone, which again, I think going into 2020, that's one of the biggest question marks on this Panthers roster. We know they can get down the field, right? They've got the players for that. DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Teddy Bridgewater, Christian McCaffrey. But what happens once they get inside the red zone? Now look at the top 7 tight ends in receiving touchdowns from 2019. Number 1, Mark Andrews with the Ravens. He had 10. Travis Kelce with the Chiefs had 9. Jared Cook with the Saints had 9. Darren Fellows with the Texans had 8. Kyle Rudolph with the Vikings had 7. Austin Hooper with the Falcons had 6. Zach Ertz with the Eagles had 6. All right, now there's one specific set. How does this affect the team? A team's ability to score in the red zone? Okay, well, Mark Andrews, Ravens were 4th in red zone scoring last year. Chiefs, Travis Kelce, they were 11th in red zone scoring last year. Jared Cook, the Saints, they were 13th. Darren Fells with the Texans, they were 9th. Kyle Rudolph with the Vikings, they were 10th. Austin Hooper with the Falcons, they were 25th. So that would be the one oddity in all of this. And then Zach Ertz with the Eagles, They were 8th in red zone scoring last year. Now, it's not like you need to be the best in the league, although the Packers were the best team in the league, and they were very, very good, and they ended up making the playoffs. But if you are really good at scoring in the red zone, if you're top half in the league, the chances of you going into the making the playoffs increase exponentially. 6 of these 7 teams were in the playoffs. 1 won the Super Bowl. Not to mention, George Kittle played, you know, for that San Francisco team, the other team that was in the Super Bowl. He had 5 touchdowns last year. He's in like a 3-way tie for 8th best tight end in the league. Just 1 fewer than Zach Ertz. His team was pretty good too. And he's actually more of a blocking tight end. Here's another thing to consider. Carolina, a year ago, was 14th in the league in red zone scoring, which does not sound bad. But new system, Teddy Bridgewater plays differently. There's no Greg Olsen this year. They are not the 15th best red zone team in the league right now. The Browns were also 14th in red zone scoring a year ago, scoring touchdowns at a clip of, equally to the Panthers, 58%. David Njoku was injured last year and only appeared in 4 games. When he was healthy, though, in 2018, mostly the same roster, he scored 6 touchdowns in Cleveland, ranked 6th in the league in red zone scoring. That was with a dysfunctional team that started 2-6-1, changed coaches in the middle of the season, and with a rookie quarterback who plays carelessly. Let's keep in mind that Cleveland used a first-round pick on this guy. They obviously like him. In Walter Football, they said he's the type of player who could be a 10 to 15 year starter. That's in a scouting report. Let's keep in mind that 2020 is only Njoku's 4th year in the league. So not only are you filling a need, but you're potentially filling a need for the next 6 to 11 years you've got your tight end. That part's figured out. Is Teddy Bridgewater the guy? I don't know. Maybe I like him. Maybe he's not. Maybe you go out and you get Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields next year. Regardless of what you do at quarterback, though, you've got your tight end. I think you've got 2 decent receivers, right? You've got your running back. So if you've got those pieces, the only thing you have left to fix next is just shore up the offensive line. And this offense is as good as anybody in the league. Like, all you're doing at this point is looking to fill pieces. And David Njoku, he was, back in 2018, ranked one of the top 5 best tight ends in the league. He's very, very good. He's physical. He is a mismatch nightmare for defenses. This is a guy that, unlike Ian Thomas, if a defensive coordinator sees David Njoku on the other side of the field, they've really got a game plan. That changes their game plan. And you think about it. I mean, the Bucs, what's their weakness? Their secondary. The Saints, what's their weakness? Once you get past Marshon Lattimore, it's the secondary. The Falcons, what's their weakness? Their secondary is not very good. They were one of the worst teams in the league last year against the pass. Not only that, but now if you have a tight end that is capable, like he is, this removes a middle linebacker from being able to spy on Christian McCaffrey. It opens up your running game having a tight end this talented. That's part of what Greg Olsen brought to the table. This is my biggest concern with the Panthers going into 2020, is what happens with this offense now that Greg Olsen is out of the picture. Because when you have a capable tight end, it opens up your running game, it opens up your ability to score in the red zone, it opens up your ability to convert on third downs, and now you're relying on Ian Thomas. David Njoku solves that problem. He's the type of player that Matt Rhule likes at tight end. He's athletic, he's quick, he's sure-handed. He's not the best blocker, although, I mean, when we watched him in 2018, it's not like he was bad. He's very, very raw. He needed some coaching. And we didn't really see a lot of him last year. Perhaps he's improved in that area. You're getting a player that we know, just on the reception side, just on his ability to catch, we know is one of the best tight ends in the league. If he just works on his blocking a little bit, he would absolutely be as good as Travis Kelce, as good as George Kittle. You get a player like that, along with dynamic Christian McCaffrey, and now you've got one of the best tight ends in the league, the most dynamic running back in the league, along with Teddy Bridgewater, who doesn't throw picks, really smart Matt Rhule. And yes, I do think it's the weakest receiving core in the division, but this receiving core, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, you start stacking that up against the rest of the league, it's probably 16th, 17th best in the league. Well, if that's all it is, that's not bad. You will win a lot of games with that roster. You can beat a lot of teams. Nobody wants to play you. He is the missing piece to this offense. He really is. And if you get him and you figure out the defense, look out. Because this team will absolutely overperform expectations. I think David Njoku opens up so many different pieces to this offense that you have to trade him. So what would Carolina need to make this happen? I think in an instance like this, aggressive is better. Because tight ends hit the market, they're not easy to find. Everybody needs them. I mean, I'm sure right now the Patriots are looking to go get them. I'm sure right now you've got, the Redskins probably are a team that want to go get them. The Texans may be a team that want to go get. You've got a lot of teams that are want to go out and get a guy like this. A lot of really good teams. The Saints may be a perfect destination for him there with Jared Goff. So you're going to have to go aggressive if you want him, because the leverage, unfortunately, even with him demanding a trade, I think the leverage is still in Cleveland's hands. So I would say a second round pick is probably what's needed to do this. I would do that in a heartbeat. Why? Say it out loud. If you could trade a second round pick for a first round pick tomorrow, would you do it? Of course. David Njoku was a first round pick. So you're trading a second round pick for a guy that was drafted in the first round. Is there a tight end in next year's draft that is a sure thing? No. But even if so, let's just say you're this esteemed scout and you're smarter than everybody else in the room. And you see this tight end, you're like, oh my gosh, that's the guy. And you can get him in the second round and he's a sure thing. Are you sure their production can equal Njoku's? Because that's a really, really big prediction to be making. A lot of these first round picks don't pan out. The hit rate on second round and beyond actually gets worse. If you can trade a second round pick to fill a need with a really talented starter for the next 5 years, you absolutely have to do it. No question. I think David Njoku is a perfect fit for this roster. He's a great fit with Teddy Bridgewater. He's a great fit for Matt Rhule. And he fills a need on this team. If Austin Eckler came out tomorrow, and he's a really good running back, if he came out tomorrow and said he wanted to be traded, I wouldn't say Carolina needs to go get him, because you've got a running back. Phillip Rivers, he was on the market. I don't think, if you could trade a player to go get Phillip Rivers, you wouldn't do it because you've got Teddy Bridgewater. You wouldn't trade up to get, a really talented receiver, unless it was like one of the top receivers in the league, because right now you've got two good receivers. You don't have anybody at tight end right now. If I had to grade this position, it's like a D, maybe even an F. You've got to go get yourself a tight end. This solves that problem. Panthers need to go do it, and they need to do it right now. All right, let's move on to the next thing. I'll be honest with you. Like, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this. I feel like our podcast, a lot of it has been, we've been a lot of Cam recently. And it's not that I regret doing that. I don't. I mean, there's honestly not been a lot of things to talk about. And a lot of people are talking about Cam. And I think there's a lot of points, whether you like Cam, whether you dislike Cam, that you can make. So I'm fine with the fact that we've had this discussion so much. But I also can kind of feel like with me, at least there's some Cam fatigue setting in. But that said, he did sign with New England, so I do want to talk about it. For one, I'm excited for Cam. We've spent the past several shows being critical of Cam, and I don't regret any of that. I stand by every take I have had on Cam all year long. I don't dislike Cam. I just believe Carolina made the right decision. I don't believe he has nothing left in the tank, and I don't believe he'll fail in New England. Sometimes in life, you just need a fresh start. You could be with a great person, a great relationship. You could be working with a great company or organization, maybe even having great results with that organization. But if you find yourself plateauing, or if you've lost your passion, it's time to start anew. Let me ask you, when you watch Cam the past several years, do you see joy? I don't. Do you see narrow focus? I don't. Do you see commitment? I don't see commitment. I've just seen a really, really talented quarterback try to survive on talent alone. And then complain about the refs or the coaches when he loses. Now, some of that is the fault of Carolina. I mean, since Steve Smith left, they really have not given him a super talented receiver. Now, he's had talented players. He hasn't had a really talented receiver. Ron Rivera is also a defensive guy. I don't think that helps out Cam. And ever since their coordinators left after that 2015 season, they haven't found the right coordinator since. But a lot of this is on Cam. The answer, though, here is a fresh start. As soon as Carolina released Cam, something happened with Cam, if you noticed. There was about a week or two of silence. But then Cam changed his message. He started posting workout videos. He started making it a point to prove other players in the league like him. Look, people like me. They want to play with me. I've got great chemistry. And he did this for a while. Remember, Carolina released Cam back in late March. It's July. He's been without a team for over 3 months. The season is nearing, and yet he never stopped pursuing his goal to get on the roster. A lot of players, I feel like if they didn't have a deal done by June, they would have been like, well, you know what? I'm probably not going to get one this year, and they would have given up. Not only that, but once he got the deal, he posted this tribute video to Carolina, which is just really cool. So, I mean, he's showing you, like, hey, I'm committed to football. And, hey, I'm willing to put that stuff behind me. I'm willing to move on. Let's talk about his contract in New England. He's signed for the league minimum. Only $550,000 of his salary is actually guaranteed. Something that cheap in the NFL, and you're essentially on a week-to-week contract. Because New England could cut him at any time and really not face any repercussion. This isn't even AB a year ago. They're like, there's no repercussion if they want to cut him. All of that said, I'm not sure this is a playoff team. For one, who's the most dynamic player in this offense? Julian Edelman? It hasn't been the same for the past year. Sonny Michel? He declined last year. N'Keal Henry? Harry? Probably not even a number two guy on most rosters, and good luck keeping him healthy. Everyone has complained about Cam's receiving options in Carolina these past few years, but it's actually going to be worse in New England. Not to mention you have Buffalo, Miami, and New York, all of which are trending in the right direction. They're all getting better. Bills, a playoff team last year. Miami has drafted really well in the past 3 years. New York also was great the second half of last year. This is not Brady's AFC East from 2015. You actually have a solid division. And I think because of that, and because New England doesn't have a lot of offensive weapons, they're going to be an 8 or 9 team with Cam. I thought they were a 4 or 5 team win with Jared Stidham. Now, perhaps Cam has a really good year, and he gets a really lucrative contract next year. I'm rooting for it. I hope it happens. Regardless of how much he's been paid, or how much he will get paid in the future, this contract is really important right now. Everything he does in 2020 is purely about football. Not his clothing line, not another big house, not even charity. Which, again, we all like charity, right? But his focus is on football. He has to perform every single week, or New England could cut him. And, I mean, if New England cuts him, middle of the year, like, career over. I mean, like, it's done. These past few months have been really tough on Cam. I get it. But this contract, this team, this coach, it could bring out his best. I don't think we're going to get 2015 Cam ever again. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying this move will be good for him. This team will be good for him. I'm happy for him. I'm 100% rooting for him. I think it's going to be interesting. Now, if he had gone into like another NFC team, I don't think we would all be rooting for him, right? But I do hope he does well. And I'm excited to see. I mean, Cam and Belichick feel like kind of opposites to me. I mean, I don't know. That does not feel like Brady. But at the same time, I mean, Brady's got his UGG boots. Cam's got his weird hats. Like, it's totally cool. If you show up, you're committed day one. Who cares? So I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be fun. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side of this break, I'm going to say something, and it might get me in trouble. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to get me in trouble. It's going to ruffle some feathers, probably yours, and that's okay. I think we're in an age where feathers have to be ruffled. So all of that and more coming back after this. This is the Full Press Coverage Panthers podcast. We'll be right back. Press Coverage Panthers podcast is back. Thank you all for listening. However you are listening, I always appreciate you making us a part of your day. We actually have real sports later on today. So I'm going to give a shout out to my friend, Tim Scarborough. For those of you who have listened to me do CJ Sweat Show, he actually came on a number of times, and Virginia Sports Report. And Tim will be one of the announcers for the basketball tournament later on today, which I'm very excited to watch. There's a team called War Tampa. Liberty grad Scotty James is on that team, so I'm excited to watch him later today. That tournament, by the way, is a lot of fun. It's all guys who aren't in the NBA, but it's all really, really good basketball. And it's a lot of college guys that you probably will remember the names of if you watch it. But it's a fun tournament. Tim will be broadcasting that later on today, so make sure you watch. Right, let me preface this with what I'm about to say has very little to do with Carolina or the Panthers at all. In fact, it has nothing to do with it. So listen, I'm saying this because I simply have a platform. I want to get something off my chest. And if you aren't interested in listening to anything besides Panther talk, that's fine. This is why I saved it for last. So if that's all you're interested in, like, I'm giving you this opportunity to tune out, and that's totally fine. It's totally fine. That's why I saved this for last. I know I'm not getting into politics really or anything like that. But here's what I want to say. The Washington Redskins are going to change their name. And it's time we had a real discussion about it. Not a discussion about, who can have the quickest comeback and who can, who can one up the other person and all that stuff. That doesn't accomplish anything. Let's have a real discussion about it. An open-minded discussion. One of the things I do before I take a stance on anything is I write arguments for both sides of an issue. No matter which side I think I agree with, I still will write an argument for the other side. I will research it. I will write it. I'll try to debate it. This is something I started doing in high school, and I think it's made me a better communicator, and it certainly has helped with podcasting. I say that because I've gone back and forth on this issue all year, and I've come to the following conclusions. Now, just keep in mind, I am the type of person I will call a spade a spade. Okay, I don't look at something as who I vote for is going to impact how I view something on this. None of that. I don't like doing that. This is truly how I feel. Come to the following conclusions. One, we need to stop comparing the word Redskin to the N-word. First of all, the N-word has been an incredibly unfortunate part of the fabric of our society. That word was used by slave owners to describe their slaves as inhuman. That's sick. It's one of the most disgusting things about our history, aside from the fact that we actually had slaves, is the fact that even after slavery was abolished, that word was still used by people to describe other people as inhuman. It's gross. It's one of the worst words in our language, and it is beyond a derogatory term. It's just plain and simple hatred. Almost all of us have heard this word used in a racist manner, directed at a person. Like, that's gross. I mean, you can go on YouTube, Twitter, whatever. You find a video of somebody using it. Like, that's the fact that in 2020, this word is just still used boggles my mind. But when you compare the word Redskin to the N-word, you're actually reducing the significance of the N-word and how abhorrent it is. When was the last time you heard someone call another person Redskin and do so in a derogatory manner? I can't say I've ever heard it. The only time we ever actually hear the word is when someone is referring to the football team. Second, let's talk about history and how we got to this nickname of the Washington Redskins. The team was originally called the Boston Braves, and then owner George Preston Marshall moved the team to Fenway Park. And after consulting with Native American tribes local to the Boston area, had the name changed to Redskins. This was a nickname Native Americans, local to the Boston area, actually championed. The entire goal of making this change was to give them a team specific to their heritage to root for. It was really just a marketing tactic. To create something so niche that a group of people actually would buy into your brand. People do that today. A lot of people do that. But in fact, that same year, George Preston Marshall took it one step further and he hired William Henry Dietz as the head coach because he thought Dietz was part Sioux. Now, his heritage is contested. The original goal of this franchise, despite his heritage being contested, was to give local Native Americans a team. The nickname wasn't given in an effort to degrade a race. It was to give Native Americans a team they could champion. George Preston Marshall founded this team under the idea that he wanted a competitive team that would go out and win. Just like we have the Boston Celtics, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Minnesota Vikings. Now, the biggest reason people cite when stating that Redskin is a derogatory term is that the term may have been used simply to refer to the football team, but it's since developed into a slur. Well, again, when have you ever heard the term used as a slur before? I haven't. I've been around Native Americans. I've never once heard anybody use this word as a term or in a slur fashion before. I just haven't. In fact, I'd make an argument that if the term was ever a slur, it's developed into something that isn't racist. Now, of course, it's not like if we're talking about development, it's developed into something that's no longer used that way. Now, of course, you could use it that way, but there's a number of words you could use to call somebody else that would be interpreted as racist. When in fact the word isn't racist, it was just the way you used it. Very seldomly do words in and of themselves actually express hatred. It's how you use the word. There's very few exceptions, which is why comparing the word Redskin to the N-word is absolutely crazy. Lastly, I understand and fully empathize with the fact that some are bothered by the name. Really, I do. So why am I against changing it? Because you have to empathize for the Native Americans on the other side of this issue. There are Native Americans local to Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., ironically where the team is actually located, who overwhelmingly support keeping the name. If you ever go to a game, you will likely see Native Americans proudly supporting the burgundy and gold. Why should they be forced to sacrifice their team, their nickname, their history, because of pressure from people who aren't actually Native American? Yes, there are some Native Americans in Montana and California who have been very vocal against the change. But even though they're against it, and again, I get it. I'm not saying their concerns aren't valid. But why do we let their voice ring louder than the ones who are actually local to the team? The last part with all of this is, where does this stop? Washington is named after George Washington, who owned 83 slaves and murdered Native Americans. The state of Virginia, where the team's facilities and headquarters are located, are named after Queen Elizabeth, who profited greatly from the slave trade and gave away land owned by Native Americans to her constituents. Both of these names actually represent significant oppression, yet they're not under fire. The only name that's under fire here, if you were to say Redskin, Queen Elizabeth, or you say Redskin, Virginia, and George Washington, of the three names that are under fire here, we're putting the one under fire that's actually been used to champion Native Americans. Of those three names associated with the franchise, the other two have actually created more oppression for Native Americans than Redskin. In the end, I fully expect that the name will be changed. You have actual pressure from FedEx and Nike. I mean, what's the old saying with league owners? Money talks. Snyder's going to get a bunch of money for a new stadium and probably gets profit sharing. I'm just asking that before we go around telling Native Americans what's good for them, again, you actually consider the history of this name and consider the Native American opinions who so adamantly oppose its changing before you make your next tweet or Facebook post. That's what I wanted to say. And I don't know if that gets me in trouble. I sure hope not. We actually, in addition to the Panthers podcast, we actually are working on another podcast that will be debuting soon. I will still be doing the Panthers podcast, but I do have other stuff in store, which I'm very excited about. So hopefully, and I don't anticipate it will. Honestly, Ian has been absolutely great. He's given us incredible freedom with how we do this. He's been incredibly supportive. So I really don't have any expectation. I just know we live in a day and age where things are different than they were a year ago, 6 months ago. So I don't know. And it didn't have anything to do with the Panthers. So I don't know. That whole rant may end up getting rescinded from the podcast later on, but let's hope not. all right, lastly, Full Press Coverage is looking for contributors. Like, listen, I love it here. Whether you're an editor, writer, or podcaster, we have an opportunity for you. Visit fullpresscoverage.com/employment for more info. Really, it's a cool place to be. I would tell you, like, I used to be really big into writing. I can't do it right. I can't do it now. I get so burnt out on it. It's just the way I am. But I know some of you are not like that at all. I know some of you are like, I could publish articles, you know, every 30 minutes. Listen, you've got freedom to do that here. It's a great place to be. Get in on our Twitter. Get in as a contributor, writer, podcaster. Lastly, visit sportscaster.com. This is really one of the coolest places to go to. I mean, you can go to sportscaster.com. You can watch these podcasts, which are really fun to watch live. I mean, some of these podcasts actually have like different graphics you can interact with. It's really, really cool. And, you know, I think right now, you know, with everything going on, like we're getting to a point where I think the podcast game is changing. People aren't just listening in their car because, quite frankly, you're not going anywhere. But you're still listening to podcasts. Well, now you can watch them. Now you can watch podcasts, and it's really, really cool to see everybody set up, see the way these things are produced. At some point soon, I'm going to set ours up so you can also watch ours, and we'll be over at Sportscaster. But listen, go to sportscaster.com. It's sportscaster.com. Bookmark the official Full Press Coverage page. You're going to get great video content. Full Press Coverage Radio Live, which is, I think it's like every morning, I want to say at like 8 or 9 o'clock. It's awesome. So you can go watch Ian. He hosts that. He does a really, really good job. And then also Pardon the Puck, our hockey show, which is absolutely fabulous, by the way. The more I listen to that, like the more I'm getting into hockey. Although I did appreciate the Capitals winning the Stanley Cup a couple years ago through the local team here. So that was fun. But go to sportscaster.com, CASTR.com. Go there, watch some of the podcasts, watch FPC Radio Live. It's a blast. All right, I want to thank all of you all for joining and listening. This is the Full Press Coverage Panthers podcast. Happy 4th.